call the Wilmer Municipal Utilities Commission meeting to order. Today is Monday, April 12th, 11:45 a.m. I'd ask that we stand for the pledge, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, liberty, and justice for all.
Thank you. Are there any changes to the agenda? Not. We'd move into the consent agenda. It consists of our minutes from the March 22nd meeting and bill payments in the amount of $1.1 million. And Mr. Hand, do you have any items to point out on bill payments?
Thank you, Commissioner Mattern. I would just like to point out one item. The capitals are highlighted on page 7. We have one item there. It's three-fourths of the way down. It's wind turbine, WCUS, wind drive control units. We bought those for inventory. As you can see by the purchaser that we purchased material there. Since the turbines have been up, we have replaced three of them. Kevin was able to. We were fortunate to find two additional drives. So we purchased them, two additional drives, probably the last two in the United States that we were able to locate. So Kevin picked them up. So hopefully as we go forward here, if we have another unit go out, we will still have two available. So I just wanted to point that out. That's wind turbine inventory. Parts are harder and harder to come by for those.
Scoop them up while we can.
Unless there's questions, otherwise that would be the only item I want to point out.
Questions? I'd look for a resolution for approval of the consent agenda.
So moved.
Second.
We have a resolution and a second. Any discussion? All right, roll call, please.
Commissioner Weber?
Aye.
Mabul?
Aye.
Magnuson?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Mattern?
Aye.
Thank you.
That passes. Thank you. Next on the agenda, we've got our Labor Committee meeting from March 30, and I'll turn that over to Commissioner Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, we did meet Tuesday, March 30th at 12 p.m. here. We had four items that we talked about. The first one was a union grievance. There was an old grievance and there's a new grievance. Both are based on our hiring practices. We went through them, discussed them. One of the items is to move on to the next step based on the bargaining agreement, and it is the recommendation of the Labor Committee to be the designee to hear that step. It's step 3 in the contract, if you read it. So we voted and agreed that the Labor Committee would hear that. There will be an update at the to the full commission as this moves forward. Number 2, we talked about the management employee engagement survey. We compared it to 2012 and 2018 surveys. With the 2020 results, there's been noted an improvement in the engagement. Pretty much all the attributes that were asked and for feedback. It was talked about the action items that have been put in place since 2018, and it certainly appears that those action items are working well as the results of the 2020 survey show. Third item we talked about was retention. With our staff over the years, a lot of the staff and team members that have been leaving as a result of the power plant being decommissioned, as well as several retirements. There was some miscellaneous items that we talked about, and more information will be coming forward on that. That information was also shared with the planning committee. So we adjourned at 2:08. There are no further items to come before the Labor Committee, so I submit to you as a motion the minutes for approval.
Second that.
We have a motion and a second for approval of the minutes as presented. Any questions?
I do have a question.
Ms. Johnson.
So on March, and I've been gone, and plus I've been offline for quite a while because my computer wasn't working. when I look at March 30th, it says that the grievance was sent confidential data email. Does that only go to the Labor Committee? Because I didn't get a copy of it.
I
Manager Herron?
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. No, excellent question. When, to keep the commission informed when there's committee meetings, Beth will send out a notice to all the commissioners. Usually stuff is loaded on the iPad, but when it's confidential, it goes only to your email.
Right.
So in this case, Beth would have sent it to your email, not onto the iPad.
And so even though I'm not on the committee, I should have got that email?
Ideally.
Yeah.
Okay.
Unless there was an oversight, but otherwise.
Probably not.
You should have received that.
Okay. And like I said, when I got back on, I had 22 and I didn't get it till this morning, so I haven't looked. So, okay. I just wondered what the policy was in case I would ever be asked by someone what's going on the Labor Committee. Okay.
Yeah. No, that's typically protocol.
Okay.
Everything gets loaded on the iPads, and that's confidential. Beth will send an email out to everyone saying, you know, Labor Committee's having a meeting, the agenda has been loaded. Planning Committee's having a meeting, the agenda's been loaded. But there are certain items that are confidential. Those items are held, sent to email only.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
But the email is the email of the utility, not the private email?
All utility, yeah.
All utility, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Good question. And Commissioner Johnson, if you have just a moment after, perhaps we could run through and just make sure you're getting everything that we need to.
I'm sure I am. I just probably missed it. But yeah, I'd like to find that email.
Yeah.
Okay.
Any other discussion? All right, all in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That carries. Then for a secondary motion, in concurrence with this, I guess we're looking for approval to designate the Labor Committee as the designee for the grievance number 7525. I'd look for a motion on that.
So moved.
Second.
A motion and a second. Any discussion on that?
So that's normally what will happen if there's a grievance. The committee will represent. Are they representing and talking to the union then on behalf of the municipal utilities?
So because this went to step three and General Manager Herron, maybe I could have you elaborate a little bit more on the process on this, please.
Thank you, Commissioner Matter. Thank you for the question, Commissioner Johnson. Step one, when there's a grievance filed in the union agreement, there's a grievance procedure spelled out.
Mm-hmm.
Step one basically goes to the supervisor. Step two goes to the manager. Step three goes to the commission or their designee. Step four goes to our arbitration.
Okay.
So we are at step three with this grievance. In the past, the Labor Committee has been designated by the commission to be that designee and take part in the hearing and listen to the union's position.
Okay.
So after that hearing will take place, the attorney, you know, always advises you basically listen, understand, ask a few questions. They will help develop the response. The response always goes back in written form.
Okay. That's why I was wondering why our attorney wasn't representing. Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Well, to be clear, the attorney will be involved.
Okay.
And so again, I would just as a reminder to our Labor Committee, just make sure that you're leaning heavily on our legal representation as well through that process. So, okay, we do have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Not all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? That also carries. Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Weber. All right, next on the agenda, we have our monthly financial reports, and I will turn that over to Ms. Pricker.
Thank you. We'll start with the electric division here for February's financial statements. To note, residential and commercial or industrial revenues are up approximately $480,000 from last year. Expenses are down approximately $573,000, and that leaves our overall retained earnings up about $979,000 from the prior year. If we move over to water, after factoring in the 20% rate increase for 2021, residential and commercial industrial revenues are down about $18,000 from where we would have expected them to be. Expenses are up $35,000 approximately from the prior year, leaving our overall retained earnings up about $42,000. Looking at the combined report, we can see that overall retained earnings are up about $1,021,000. And the final page there with the graphs, we can now compare January to February in the three categories. And off to the right, we can compare the 2021 to 2020 for year to date. Is that kind of what we were looking for on that graph, or if there's any changes, we're open to some questions.
I like the format. I forget who requested that change, but
it is nice.
Are we good with what we see here?
That was me that requested that.
Are you happy with what you see?
Yeah, one suggestion, just what I'm used to, I guess. Take the 2020 numbers and just plug those in as we, right now, plug them in, and then as we go throughout the year, put in the blue.
Okay.
I presume that's what's going to happen on the right side, in the right column?
Well, so you'll see 2020 January through December, right? And then your blue lines will show up every month.
Yep.
But on the revenue, like, or on the year to date, I assume you want that to match.
Oh, I like that.
Okay.
And just for the board paper, Commissioner Weber, if you fill in the revenue by the month as we're discussing here, are on the right side, that revenue will show the full annual revenue.
I can separate it.
So you're looking for that separation, so the right revenue and expenditures reflect year to date, but the chart itself, the main chart, the 12 month, has each month in it already. Okay.
Personal preference, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
But thank you, it looks good.
We'll continue on to investments.
Okay, so work in progress here. We made a couple changes and a couple more changes coming to this report. On here, we'll be able to see our month-end value for our investments, the total annual rate of return so far. And then we added some notes here. So anytime we add money to an investment or withdraw, you'll see those notes. And in February, I just combined the Heritage Bank, Jumbo, and ICS accounts because they kind of sweep a little bit. So that was the other change that was made.
Thank you. Regarding those changes, I've had some discussion about a couple modifications there, and I might invoke our treasurer to see if I can get his assistance on a couple points thereafter, perhaps after the meeting as well. So, all right, cost of power report. Very quickly, commissioners, we just wanted to show you that for February of 2021, our cost of power was 4.4 cents. And that decrease was partially due to, I believe, the full depreciation of the steam system. Is that correct, Andrea?
Yep. So we removed all the district heating assets at the end of the year, so that affected some depreciation was included in that power plant cost previously.
And so you see at the very bottom, on the bottom right-hand side of that graph, that our 12-month rolling average is now at 6.4 cents per kilowatt hour. Thank you. Any other questions?
I do have it, and it ties into the electrical division one with the cost of purchase power being down, or maybe it doesn't tie into that. Is that just a timing issue that is down so significantly, or was our cost of power really down that much compared to budget? Because we're about over $700,000 down from budget. I didn't know if that was a timing issue or if that was, or what that might be.
That could be a timing issue.
We're looking at the right numbers, Commissioner Magnus said. And are we looking at purchase power year to date? We're at 1.7, and last year we're at even 2, so that's about 300,000.
Well, I'm comparing it to budget of 2.4.
Well, no, what we got going on there, our budgets are divided up. We take our total budget, and then Colin Andrew divides it up by 12. Our summer months are low. Our power supply costs are considerably higher. When you look at it, the first probably 4 months out of the year, that number looks like we are considerably under. Through the summer months, we actually end up the opposite way. Then in October, November, December, our power supply costs are lower again, so then we kind of even out at year end. So it's kind of very deceiving.
Any other questions?
Yeah, that's why we keep the note on the bottom that the power supply or our budgets are divided by 12 months in our accounting system.
Okay, I think we're good on the financial reports. Thank you, Andrew and Chris. All right, next we've got the approval of the account fund balances for 2021. Ms. Precker, we'll turn that back to you.
Sure. So on here we see that these yellow highlighted ones are the ones that have had a change in their balance. We are no longer required to have those bond covenants that were in the top there. So that utility improvement replacement fund was moved down to a fund designation, now listed as number 2. And we've added the district heat underground piping reserve fund a little bit there. And this is our investment balance as of 12/31/2020. Those are what the fund designations are based on and compared to the 2019 balance that was approved in April of last year.
Andrew mentioned our district heat underground piping. We got $250,000. We're proposing that the commission consider designating that. Our full underground, based on Wink's estimate on that report that they gave to us here 2 months ago, 3 months ago, I think full change out based on today's dollar was around $800,000. So it was decided between the commission and the city council that we would approach that street by street as the streets come up. So we're recommending that we designate 250, as that should be the high end of any one individual year that we may have to do system removal in the streets, as most of our pipe is in the boulevard and should be unaffected. So we're proposing that as a placeholder. If we use any of those dollars from year to year, we'd come back and recommend replacing those dollars until we have addressed our district heating system that's in the streets or part of the street system.
To be clear, that $800,000 estimate, we don't expect to hit that because a significant portion would be able to remain in ground?
That would be correct, Commissioner Matter.
Okay. Any additional questions? If not, I'd look for a resolution for approval of the account fund balance for 2021.
So moved.
Second.
We have a resolution and a second. Discussion. All right, Ms. Mathiasen, if you could take the roll.
Commissioner Mabou?
Aye.
Magnuson?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Mattern?
Aye.
Weber?
Aye.
That passes. Thank you. Next on the agenda, we have our March 2021 wind turbine report. Mr. Marty.
Thank you. As you can see on the wind turbine report, we actually had a real nice month in March. However, we did have one turbine that was only turbine 4. Had a gearbox speed sensor fault, and that kept us down there for about a week during the month. Otherwise, we would have had a spectacular month. 866,500 total kilowatt hours produced in March. And if you look at the chart, the four-year average chart, it's actually the third highest output in the last 4 years. So if we'd have had turbine 4 at 100%, we would have, like I mentioned, probably had a spectacular month there. Overall, the turbines have been running well, other than that one fault. So, stand for questions if you have them.
Take it easy on you this time around.
Do we share this with the public much?
Because it actually is on the website, so it's available there to access.
Okay.
When this exact report, so.
All right. Thank you, Kevin. Next on the agenda, we have our approval for the annual LMCIT liability coverage, the waiver form, and Ms. Precker, I'll turn that one back to you.
Thank you. This is a standard form for our liability coverage. It states that an individual claimant could recover no more than $500,000 on any claim, and the total for a single occurrence to which a statutory limit apply would be limited to $1.5 million. Past practice would be to not waive the monetary limits.
This is an annual occurrence, and we are just following our past practices here, correct?
Correct.
Look for a resolution for approval on the waiver form.
So moved.
Second.
Resolution and a second. Discussion. Ms. Mathiason, if you could take a roll.
Commissioner Magnuson?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Mattern?
Aye.
Weber?
Aye.
Mabul?
Aye.
That passes. Thank you. Next up, we have our educational topic on electric vehicles. Mr. Riedel.
Again, commissioners. Today, I'm here just to give you a little bit of a recap on electric vehicles. I know that we had something on it last year, but I just wanted to present some of the updated information we have for the area. So, just a little bit of terminology to rekindle those thoughts is that we have two basic types of electric vehicles. We have all electric vehicles, which use just batteries or fuel cells. And then we have PHEVs, which are plug-in hybrid, so a dual system, electric and gas. So last year, as you can see in this chart here, we had the Wilmer area had 11 plug-in hybrids, 9 all electric vehicles, or a total of 20 total electric vehicles in the area. In 2021, we have 27 plug-in hybrids, 22 all-electric vehicles, for a total of 49. Now, this is outside of the Wilmer area. This is all of Kandy, Ohio, but I just wanted to show you that there has been quite a move in larger purchases of electric vehicles. On the next slide here, it gives us information on the makes of all of the electric vehicles, and we have two colors in that. You can see that the darker green color is the actual AEVs, all electric vehicles, and the lighter shade is the plug-in hybrids. And just a few notes I wanted to communicate with all of you. We are going to very carefully monitor the number of electric vehicles registered in the area. This is going to affect eventually things like our load capacity as more and more people buy electric vehicles and plug in at different times of the day. WMU has recently promoted a PHEV or a plug-in hybrid vehicle at the Wilmer Spring Show this last weekend to help educate and familiarize customers with battery-powered electric vehicles. And actually, it was quite a success. The vehicle that we got was from MRES. They loaned us a Mitsubishi Outlander, which is a hybrid vehicle that gets about 22 miles for its battery charge, and then it switches over to the gas. But a lot of people were interested in seeing how it works, how to plug it in, and it was pretty interesting for a lot of people. Finally, the staff will continue to market and promote EV rebates provided by MRES to WMU customers. We currently have two different rebates available. One of them is just doing a survey for anyone who purchases an EV vehicle so that we know when they're charging. The other one is a $500 rebate for a specialized device that allows us to read when they're charging. And we do that for about 3 years. Does anyone have any questions?
Yeah, I have a quick question.
Sure.
Let me do about this. That was the wrong thing. Sorry about that. I can understand, you know, the electric vehicles that needs the charge, but I'm not a little bit, you know, understanding more about hybrid. My understanding of the hybrid, how it works, it's like when you're using the gasoline, it also charges that battery. So how that will impact, you know, charging stations in relation with the hybrid cars.
Sure.
Vehicles.
Well, so, let's Second. Yesterday at the, or I'm sorry, this weekend, we had a hybrid vehicle that, again, had 22 miles on its battery powered. And what I was telling a lot of customers or people that were coming up, when they said, well, that's not really that far, what I was suggesting to them is, if you're living in Wilmer, most of the day, if you work and live in Wilmer, 22 miles can get you everywhere you want to go to get your groceries or wherever you need to. And then you can easily come home and plug it back in for the remaining of the day. Now, with some vehicles, they do charging on while you're driving. Yeah. The one that we particularly had, there was charging on braking. But a Prius, for example, does charging while you're driving, which is just a little bit different. There are some different models for charging based on what the manufacturers produce.
So they still needed charging station, the ones that with the gas, you know, the hybrids.
Well, they still do need charging, but with, I would say, with those particular models, that is more applicable at home. So for example, you could plug that into a 20 amp circuit by yourself and do the charging at home, which would be maybe a little bit easier than actually searching out for a charging station.
It would also be a correct statement that depends on how far you drive. There are some vehicles that charge while you drive, so you know, you do more than 22 miles or you leave the town. And I also believe, and I know this one in particular, Chris, you know, usually when you hit 30 or 40 miles an hour, the engine takes over regardless if there's charge left. So when the engine takes over, some units charge the batteries, others do not.
I see.
So it kind of depends on the type of vehicle that you buy
okay.
and how it's designed and how the charging system is designed. So there's different options based on individual needs, based on their driving habits.
And then just for your information to the commission, you can see up here that this is the vehicle that we had out there. And you can see on the left-hand side, we have that plug-in right there, which was a great topic of conversation for people. They could actually see where it is, how easy it was to plug in, and all of that information. And in fact, they were pretty happy to see the bigger size of the vehicle as well. I had a parent that came in and said, wow, you know, I could fit my family in there, and that could work out just fine for us. So, are there any additional questions?
I like the toilet and the display.
Well, at this particular event, we were also promoting water conservation and checking.
That, yes. I thought maybe it was for convenience.
Cars may soon have them.
I do have a question. You said you're going to monitor usage as far for our capacity, something along that lines. How many cars is it going to take to move that needle? Is it? We've got 49 now. I can't imagine that puts a big dent in our...
Well, I would just say that it would take a significant amount, especially if most of these people are charging in the evening when our power is the lowest, and it would take, I don't know, 1,000 or so cars at least.
That's the number I
had. Depending on how you're asking the question, Commissioner Weber, it's going to take, as Chris said, a lot to move the needle on our overall annual consumption of power. However, when we start looking at designs, and we got some housing development designs going, and internally at staff level, we started having discussion, do we start upsizing our transformers? Because as a rule, and we got Jaron in here, you might correct me, but as a rule, you know, one transformer will serve four houses, basically. And all of a sudden you get four houses, all have EVs. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, our standard 7.5 kVA transformer isn't large enough, and we got to upsize those. So, from a design perspective, three cars can make a difference on how we provide service to that cluster that we serve off of that one transformer. But as far as your overall sales, yeah, it's going to take a lot before you move the needle.
And then another question I have is, are we looking at charging stations throughout the city?
That's another good question, Commissioner Weber. We've been in discussion with ZEP. ZEP received from PCA the contract to install charging stations on certain corridors. Highway 12 being one of those corridors, we were the furthest out. They've changed location, what, three times already that Jaron and his staff put together estimates for install. Planning committee had a long discussion. We changed the rate for ZEP because they come and ask about our demand rate. They ask if we'd follow more of a rate that was approved by XL Energy through the PUC. The commission has changed that rate. To date, ZEP still has not installed. So we're working on it, but the short answer is no, but it's not that we're not working with companies trying to get them in.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Riddle.
Thank you.
All right, our next topic is the strategic planning session from March 25th, and that'll be Mr. Marty and Mr. Riddle.
Thank you. Just a quick note on the last presentation. I believe the car is still here.
Yep.
If anybody wants to touch it, feel it, drive it after the meeting, Chris will take you for a tour, maybe buy Dairy Queens. You're welcome.
Record.
Strategic plan update. Thank you. We had our management team and members of the Labor Relations Committee met with Marcy Douglas from MRES back on March 25th. As you recall, we've contracted with MRES to update our strategic plan this go around. That was session one. During that session, we talked a lot about what the definition of victory and success looked like to us over the next 5 years, and then identified roadblocks and obstacles that could prevent us from reaching those objectives. The group then further discussed and identified 8 strategic goals and identified and organized objectives to meet those goals. After the meeting, the following week, we at staff level received strategic plan summary drafts along with goals and key performance indicators. Staff spent the next week working through those draft copies and editing and adding additional key performance indicators, and then those were sent back to Marcy and returned to us on March 7th. Let's jump forward and take a look at that real quick. The next item, the strategic plan summary draft. This is kind of an outline of the results of that first meeting. It is still in draft form, so you can see our mission statement, our core values. The long-range goals are the 8 identified goals from that meeting. And that statement under each goal is kind of a mini mission statement that we came up with for each of those items, kind of briefly stating what the long-term goal is. Over on the right are the key performance indicators, or how we measure the success for each one of those. And that's kind of just a snapshot right now, and we've been working on ironing out the rest of those goals. We'll jump back to the plan update. So our next steps, Marcy will actually be here this Thursday the 15th for session 2. During this meeting, we're going to hopefully finalize the key performance indicators, and then we'll format the plan into a 3 to 5 year goal timeline, and then break it down even further into our first year goals. What do we have to do the first year to get to year 5? Each year that plan will be updated. And then we would anticipate, we've been very happy with the results so far working with Marcy, and we would anticipate possibly every 3 to 5 years as needed to redo this process with MRES. Staff suggests that once the plan is completed, that we would bring it to the Labor Relations Committee to review the plan and formulate the recommendation for the entire commission approval. And I would certainly answer questions if you have them. Keep in mind that the draft that is attached, there will be more pieces to the entire document than just this one sheet. That's just kind of an outline.
Kevin, the meeting this week for session 2, I assume that's April 15th, not March 15th. That's staff only?
That's correct.
Labor will not be involved in that one?
Yep.
Okay.
It's a little bit more in the weeds still with breaking down how we get to the goals.
Commissioners, questions?
Well, although I didn't attend that meeting, this draft really looks nice. I really liked it. It's very nice. My question was, I see the long-term goal, but I'm in long range, but also short. But you indicated that you're going to be diving in, but it looks beautiful. Very nice.
Thank you. Yeah. You were missed.
Thank you.
We do appreciate Labor's assistance with that as well. Any additional thoughts or questions?
I have a question.
Mr. Magnuson?
When you look at long-term goals, long-range goals, did you identify any time frame for that? Is it 1 to 5 years, 1 to 10 years, 2 to 10 years?
Most of the plan was focused on the 3 to 5 year.
Okay.
When we went into it, it was a 5-year plan. There are aspects to each one of these. You kind of see once you get into the more detail, the planning portion of it, for example, has your 10-year capital improvement budget incorporated into it. Each piece has separate items, I guess, that do extend out into that 5 to 8, 10 year plus.
I think the answer to Ross's question is that's coming in our next session.
Yeah.
So we'll be set timeline.
Breaking it down.
At the next session, we'll take what Kevin is presenting here, and then we start diving in deeper on adding timelines to it and actually what tools need to be put in place to accomplish these key indicators.
Okay. And I guess one of the reasons I asked that, what the time frame is here, because if it was, a 1 to 5 year, you got a building across the street that should be a goal to come down. Because that's going to be a kind of a long-range project, too. So that's why I asked if it's 1 to 5, 3 to 5, 1 to 10, what that would be.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin.
All right, next on the agenda, Mr. Smith wants to spend some money, get some bid awards.
Thanks, Chairman. You got on to that, huh? All right, so to start with, we have the cell sub-control panel bid. This is part of a larger project to retire some old oil field circuit breakers at our cell substation and replace them with a newer SF6-style circuit breaker. Along with that, we're updating the protection and controls for the 69 kV equipment. So that is what this specific contract is about. On March 30th, we received bids. We received 3 responses for bids. The low bidder was Electrical Power Products. Their bid was in the amount of $126,898. We actually have a lot of Electrical Power Products control panels in our existing substations. I'm very happy with their workmanship and how their materials perform. EGR is also recommending that we award this bid to Electrical Power Products because of their positive experience with them. On page 2, there is actually the summary of the other bids that we received, and then on the following pages is a little bit more itemized detail of the different aspects of the bid spec there. So with that, I would concur with DGR's recommendation to go with Electrical Power Products. Are there any questions on that?
Jaron, are we within budget on this project?
So the engineering estimate for this portion was $179,000. This falls below that. The total project is budgeted at $800,000. We currently, including this contract, would be at $314,000, which is still in line with what we expect to spend. This week, we're actually going to be advertising the construction portion of the contract, and then it's the remainder of the engineering costs yet to come in.
I have a question. Why do we sub out opening the bids?
The portion that we sub out is we're actually hiring DGR Engineering to do the bid design. So they identify what materials we need, and then they seal it along with all the other contract requirements. So they kind of administer that part. We still advertise and open, and then they kind of proofread them. Is that answering your question?
And am I reading it? Is that then they charge 10% of the total project? Or how do they get paid?
No, it's... They would present us a proposal up front.
And okay.
Then we present that to the commission and would award the engineering design contract administration to the engineering firm.
Commissioner Johnson, staff here, we do open the bids. We open them, and then the bids, as Jaron stated, are sent to DGR as an audit to make sure that all bid specifications are met.
Okay.
They prepared them. But the bid opening takes place here.
Okay. Got it.
Any other questions? I'd be looking for a resolution for approval of the South Subcontrol Panel contract.
So moved.
I did have one more question.
Okay.
Are we required? Do we always take the low bid?
We would not be required to take the low bid. There's always opportunity for the low bidder to then contest the award. Looks like John maybe has some input here.
Typically, by statute, we're required to take a little bid unless there's justification not to, and that has to be supported by the bid documents and the contract that was prepared soliciting bids.
Okay.
Now, you're going to see as we get into the next one, we did not take the little bid.
Okay, got it.
But by the short answer, by statute, we're required to.
Okay.
So I do have a resolution by Commissioner Boob. Do I have a second?
Second.
We have a resolution and a second for approval of the South Subcontrol Panel contract. Any discussion? Ms. Mathiason, if you could take roll.
Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Mattern?
Aye.
Weber?
Aye.
Maboob?
Aye.
Magnuson?
Aye.
That resolution passes. Mr. Smith, you've got another one for us.
All right, thank you. So this contract that we're evaluating here is for the transformer purchase for our Wilmer substation expansion. On March 11th, we received the bids for this transformer. There were two responsive bids that we received. One was from Delta Star and the other was from SPX. And as John had mentioned earlier, Delta Star did take exception to two of the requirements within our spec. Number one was the delivery date. We required in the spec a March 16th delivery date, and that was so that we could commission and energize the substation prior to the summer peak load. The Delta Star delivery date was July 20th, so if we received or accepted that bid, we would not be able to make that window. And then the other significant exception here is for the LTC. That stands for load tap changer, and that's the portion of the transformer that regulates the voltage. So as the power that goes through the transformer goes up and down, the voltage will also go up and down. Well, that's not very good for our customers, so we put an LTC on there to maintain a stable voltage while that power that moves through changes. Delta Star's proposal was to put this LTC on the neutral connection of the transformer. Our specification required it in a different spot. And when we talked to both DGR, Great River Energy, and then we reached out to a consultant as well, all of them were aware of this type of connection, but nobody actually had ever seen one or has one in their system. So we're talking about a pretty good footprint of substations, and we haven't actually seen this proposal. It's more common on a smaller transformer, but in this size, it's not. And so another part of that issue is if we were to consider Delta Star with this proposal, it would not really be an apples to apples comparison to XPX. We'd have to rebid the project, allowing that sort of configuration so that other manufacturers would have an opportunity to quote that type of design because it does significantly influence the cost. So with all that said, DGR is recommending that we award this contract to SPX in the amount of $2,940,001. I would concur with that recommendation. SPX is a quality transformer manufacturer, and both DGR has had good experience with them. On the next page, you'll see the different prices from the other bidders, and it includes delivery, field services, and that type of information. Are there any questions?
Mr. Smith, again, this was a budgeted project and within budget?
So this one isn't quite as pleasing. The original estimate that we received back in 2019 for this transformer was for a transformer rated at 160 MPA. That's the size of the transformer. Through design work, talking with both GRE, Missouri River Energy Services, and the planners that kind of lay out the area grid, it was suggested that we go to 187 MVA transformer, so we increased the size of the transformer that we needed since an estimate was made. And also steel prices are getting astronomical right now. I thought lumber prices were bad, but apparently this is far worse. So what we expected back in 2019 for 160 MVA transformer was 1.7 million. We're almost double what we see on that. DGR Engineering expects to have some unknowns in prices, and so they build a contingency into their estimate. Our original estimate also included the control house and some 230 kV line switches. Both of those, the control house is now GRE responsibility, and the line switches we elected not to go with. So there's room in our budget. I'm not concerned that we'll still meet the overall project budget, but this did exceed what we were expecting for this purchase, and we are going to have to keep an eye on the rest of the materials and costs that go out.
Do you have a rough estimate as to the little over $1 million cost increase? How much of that is due to steel versus how much is due to upsizing from what the original estimate size was?
So roughly speaking, $300,000 is what they would have estimated for a larger transformer, and then they expect around $500,000 for the steel increase price.
Thank you. Other questions? Entertain a resolution for approval of the Wilmer Sub Transformer project.
So moved.
Second.
We have a resolution and a second. Discussion. Ms. McLeodison, if you could take roll.
Commissioner Mattern?
Aye.
Weber?
Aye.
Mabou?
Aye.
Magnuson?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
That passes. Thank you. Quickly emptying our pockets, but I'll let you do one more.
Thank you. Okay, so the last one here is our 2021 annual underground construction project. The budget for this is $441,000. On April 1st, we received two bids for this project. The low bidder was ONS Construction for an estimated amount of $216,445. Now I say estimate because this contract covers any cable failures that we have to go out and replace in the summer. It also covers any new residential or commercial businesses that come to town and we need to build out service to, and everything in between there. So we don't actually know the exact dollar amount or the footage of what we're planning to do this summer. However, they submitted their pricing for the different types of installation, whether it's a boring or plowing, different labor prices. And then we use past history to identify, well, we expect to do this much this summer, and that's how we come up with this evaluation cost or estimate. And that's why you don't have another second page with different bid amounts on it, too. But these are our estimated costs, and again, ONS has had this contract for many, many years in the past, and we don't have any concerns awarding this to ONS Construction. Any questions?
So we only use DGR if we're doing sub-panels or sub-transformers, because it looks like you did the other underground construction.
Yeah, when the projects certainly aren't an annual thing, when it's every 5 to 10 years, we oftentimes will use an engineering firm to do the design work on that. This one, because it's more in our wheelhouse, that was handled in-house.
Got it.
To expand on that, Commissioner Johnson, also by statute, when our projects hit $175,000 and up, we need to have full-blown plans and specs prepared for bidding. And that's outside of our time and capabilities.
$175,000?
Yes.
Well, this was $216,000. So if they're over that? I'm sorry, I don't know if I'm following you.
No, I probably misstated here a little bit.
Okay.
Our engineering firm, this is a simple project. They prepared the plans and specs on that. $175,000, basically, we got to come before the commission for approval by our policy.
Oh, okay.
So we, up to $175,000 by purchasing policy, we can get by with a reduced set of plans and specs.
Okay.
Once we have 175, then you need full plans and specs.
Okay.
And we also need commission approval.
Okay.
So anything below that, at staff level, we have the ability.
Got it.
Jaron, I might have missed this, and I apologize if so, but is this all new underground construction, or is this replacement, or a combination of both?
It's basically everything. So we do have a separate project to replace underground cable that's just aged, and that is what we've historically had Midwest win that contract, and I believe it's the Pleasant View neighborhood where we're going to continue last year's project, which was put on hold due to COVID and just tightening our spending. So this one is anything that fails, any new commercial, new residential, and anything else that we deem necessary to do throughout the summer.
Okay. Other questions? Anybody want to offer a resolution for approval of the 2021 underground construction project?
Yes, so moved.
Second.
We have a resolution and a second. Further discussion? Ms. Mathiasen, one more time, please.
Sure. Commissioner Weber?
Aye.
Mabul?
Aye.
Magnuson?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Matter?
Aye. That passes. Thank you.
Thank you, Jaron.
All right, finally on the agenda here, we've got our general manager's report.
All right, thank you, Commissioner Matter. A couple items we want to list there just to close the circle here on some of the projects we got going on. February 8th, the commission approved our reserve capacity agreements. That's our generation that we have, our six units, 12 megawatts. Those changes, however, we received the agreements that are ready to be executed. So they're in a packet. They'll be in the folder for Commissioner Matter to execute here today. Then if you go down to the GRE master transmission, our T2T, T2L agreement, again, commission has approved that November 9th, and we finally have the finalized agreement from GRE, so that'll be in the packet for Commissioner Matter to sign as well. And then the last item that's on there is an FYI. Kevin is working with the realtor on finding a tenant for Jerry's building, and they are working through the city on a permit, I guess you'd call it, a permit to start a business there.
Is it a public tenant? Is that a grocery store?
Yeah, they're looking at starting a grocery store in there, so they want to rent the bottom floor as well as 11 parking spots there. So we want to make the commission aware of it, so you see activity going on there, you know what's going on. So those are the three items there I want to touch on. And then again, we talked about already, we got a planning committee meeting coming up here. And then on the bottom, Again, we got Missouri River Annual Meeting. If you go underneath the item 13 right after adjournment, please let Beth know if you're interested or you have time. Again, it's going to be a virtual event, so it gives you the opportunity to take part in all or part of the Missouri River Annual Meeting without actually having the travel time involved with it. So unless there's additional questions, I would conclude the general manager's update.
Any questions? All right, any other business to come before the commission today? If not, I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
We have a motion to adjourn. This meeting is now adjourned. Thank you.